Good afternoon. It is good to be with you again. We enjoyed our visit last week. In spite of all the rain, thunder, hail, lightning, the TV going on and off, and all kinds of good things. And we thought we were over with that storm when we left this building. But as we were headed west towards our home on I-4, it caught up with us. And we were down to about 20 miles an hour for about 12 miles. And hard to see the car in front of you. And then, on our journey over here tonight, there was an accident as soon as we got on I-4, and then there were two additional backups. So we don't need to go to any kind of theme park for joyrides. All we have to do is go out on I-4, and that takes care of it for us. Seriously, it's good to be with you again. I look forward to this. I'm glad that I'm able to help you while Chuck is proclaiming the gospel and doing good work in India. For many years, I've claimed to be a gospel preacher, and I hope that that's the case. But at the same time, I like to go back to the Old Testament for some of our lessons also, because those things have been preserved for us by God so that we might learn from especially the examples that are back there. The Apostle Paul said that the things were written aforetime were written for our learning, and hopefully we'll be able to do that as we look to our lesson tonight. Many of you have already gotten the sermon outline. Some of you remember that when I was with you before filling in that I had passed those out. And I didn't think you'd remember last week, but you did. Several folks asked me about them, so you can have the lesson sheet to look on as I'm speaking. Most people are familiar with the worthy woman of Proverbs 31. If you've been a Christian very long, you've heard probably a lot of lessons on her. She is described as one who is praised by her family and by God. She is held forth as an example for women today to emulate. But on the other hand, there's been very little taught about a worthy man, a man who could be presented as an example to male Christians today. Quite often we focus upon the woman, and we should. Ladies need to learn how that they are to conduct themselves as godly females. But at the same time, men need to learn how they need to conduct themselves as godly males. And as we look to the scriptures, we can understand that there's an example given to us for that. And that's the man Job. Quite often when we go to Job, we look at the first few passages and we talk about how Satan was tempting him and how Satan brought all of those evil things upon him, trying to get him to curse God and die, as Job's wife suggested that he do. But there's much more to this book than just the first two or three chapters to it. Because as we look to it, there are so many things that are played out before us, things from which we can learn. Especially as we look to Job, he is described as one who was blameless and upright, one who feared God and shunned evil. Now that ought to be the desire of every male who is a Christian. Matter of fact, it ought to be the desire of every male and female to be an upright individual, one who is blameless, justified before God, one who fears God, shuns evil, and is obedient unto God. And what's so interesting about Job is, in spite of all the adversity he had to endure, he remained faithful to God. We live in adverse times, at least we think we do. And thus we need to look especially to those times when the people of God were suffering, when they were dealing with adversity, when they were dealing with problems, dealing with woes, and it will help us understand more. But with Job, it's not just dealing with adversity, it's looking at his whole life and his attitude toward life. For in the 31st chapter, Job describes himself and his attitudes about life. He did this because he was defending himself against the false charges that he was a sinful man, that his three friends had leveled against him. They said, Job, all of these things are coming upon you because you're a sinful man. You've committed sin, and you're suffering because of your own sins. But Job was denying that. And in this 31st chapter, in the description that he gives, we find godly attitudes that are helpful. Helpful to us today. Helpful to us if we're going to live godly and live righteous lives. As hopefully the desire of each one of us who's a male is, that's our goal as we look to our God. We need to understand that Job is indeed a worthy man, okay? And as we look to his worthiness, there we go. As we look to his worthiness, we begin by considering, first of all, he is morally pure. It goes without saying that those of us who claim to be children of God ought to be morally pure. Look what Job had to say concerning himself, beginning in verse 1 of Job chapter 31. He said, I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a young woman? For what is the allotment of God from above and the inheritance of the Almighty from on high? Is it not destruction for the wicked, disaster for the workers of iniquity? Does he not see my ways and count all my steps? Job said, God is aware of me and aware of what I am doing. Therefore, I have said, I am not going to give myself over to that which is impure. I'm going to be one who stands before God as being morally pure. Job knows to think on things that are pure. The Apostle Paul encourages us to do that in Philippians, the 4th chapter in verse 8. Not only does he tell us to think on those things, as some of the older translations tell us, but the newer translation says we are to meditate upon these things. And when you meditate upon something, it's not just giving a passing thought, but it's rather giving quite a bit of attention to it. And we need to think about things that are pure, things that are lovely, things that are good. And if Job was going to keep his commitment to God, that's what he had to do. He also had to apply the wisdom that is from above. There is that wisdom that is earthly, sensual, and devilish that mankind might have, but the wisdom that comes from above is from God, and it's pure, it's holy, and it will allow us to not only think, but act in a pure and holy way. And because of the covenant that he said he had made with his eyes, he keeps himself pure. As Paul told Timothy, you need to keep yourself pure. In 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter, and looking there to verse 22, he also realizes, as Paul wrote to Titus, to the pure all things are pure. Job was not given over to sinfulness, as his friends challenged him, but he was given to pure thoughts, pure actions, living a pure life. And the fellow today who is like Job as a Christian has hope in God, so he purifies himself as God is pure. That's what the Apostle John encouraged in 1 John, the 3rd chapter, and looking there to verse 3. So we can see that Job is morally pure, and we ought to strive to be that way also. We also see that as a worthy man, he is characterized by justice in all things. Continuing on in the 31st chapter, and we look to beginning verse 5. He said, if I have walked with falsehood, or if my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed on honest scales that God may know my integrity. If my step has turned from the way, or if my heart has walked after my eyes, or if any spot adheres to my hands, then let me sow and another eat. Yes, let my harvest be rooted out. Job is saying, I'm going to stand before God. Weigh me with fair scales, and it will show that I'm a just man, that I've not dealt falsely, that I've not given myself over to sin. If I have, let someone else profit from the things that are mine. Because as Job looks, he's characterized by other Old Testament worthies, pardon me. Consider the examples of Noah, Abraham and Joseph. Not the Old Testament Joseph, but the New Testament one. In Genesis 6 and verse 9, speaking of Noah, this is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. Being just, he was fair, he was decent, he was honorable, he was a person of integrity. And that allowed him to walk with God. We look to Abraham in Genesis, the 18th chapter and verse 19. God, speaking of Abraham, said, "For I've known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him." God blessed Abraham abundantly. Matter of fact, Abraham is given the title, so to speak, the father of the faithful, because he was a faithful individual before God. He trusted God and showed great faith in God. Pardon me. And because of that, God was able to bless him. And knowing that not only was Abraham righteous and just, but he would teach those who would come after him to be the same. Pardon me. In the New Testament, we also, take that back one. We also see a just man. In Matthew, the first chapter, in verse 19, we see Joseph. Mary was betrothed to Joseph. Mary, who would give birth to the Savior, the Son of God. Joseph, her husband, being a just man, and not wanting to make her a public example, was minded to put her away secretly. Can you imagine if it had been someone else who was not just, who was not fair, who was not reasonable, what they would have done to find out the one to whom they'd been betrothed was with child. But here was Joseph. And he was such a good man, a just man, a righteous man, that God entrusted his own son to Joseph to be his father while he was here upon the earth. We are to do justly. In Micah, the 6th chapter, and we look there to verse 8. He, God, has shown you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. These are three key elements of the life that we ought to be living. And notice it starts it out by doing that which is just. We need to be just individuals. We need to be individuals, yes, who love mercy and walk humbly before God, but that just is the key to those things. Being just is the key to those things. And so as we look to these things, we are told in Romans, the 1st chapter and in verse 17, that it is the just who lives by faith. Consider what Paul said there. It's a passage you're probably familiar with, because in verse 16 he says, "I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes. For the Jew first, and also for the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith." In some of the other translations, it says, "the righteous shall live by faith." To be just is to be righteous, to be a person of integrity, to be that one who is fair-minded in all things, looking to God and the will of God and being guided by it in everything you do and all the decisions that you make, and even every thought that you have. Job was considered a worthy man, or at least I consider him a worthy man, worthy of our example, because he considered marriage sacred. I don't need to tell you we live in a time when marriage is not respected. There's so many who cohabitate without marriage, or there are those that enter into marriage, and when they become dissatisfied with it, for just the slightest thing, they walk. They divorce. But Job considered marriage sacred. Look to what he had to say. Verse 9, beginning in our text. "If my heart has been enticed by a woman, or if I'd lurked at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind for another, and let others bow down over her. For that would be wickedness, yes, it would be iniquity, deserving of judgment. for that would be a fire that consumes to destruction and would root out all my increase. Job says, if I covet even my neighbor's wife, if I covet another woman, if I desire and lust after another woman, he said, let my wife be given to another man, and let me suffer because of it. Job considered marriage sacred. And I want you to remember what kind of a wife he had. Remember, she's the one that told him to curse God and die. All the rest of his family was taken away. But she still remained. But she did not remain to support her husband. She was there critical of him and telling him to curse God because of all the things that were coming upon him. But in spite of that, Job was a good husband. He remained loyal to his wife, even though it seems she didn't really remain loyal to him. He adheres to the principles of Hebrews, the 13th chapter in verse 4, where it says, marriage is honorable among all and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. That was the idea under the old law, and even during the patriarchal period, but certainly it's the law of God today, that the bed is to be undefiled. Marriage is to be considered honorable. But we live in a society where marriage is looked down upon, as we said earlier, that marriage is considered that which one puts on a marriage, puts on a ball and chain. That's not what marriage is about. God created the woman in the beginning and saw that it was good for man and woman to be together in that marriage relationship, and God pronounced it good. And it is good when the right choices are made and when the right attitudes are there. We're told in the New Testament that husbands are to love their wives. If you go to the 5th chapter of the book of Ephesians, husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church. Christ was willing to give his all for the church, died so that the church might be purchased. They're to love their wives as they love their own bodies, to cherish her and keep her in a good way. Husbands are to love their wives as they love themselves. And the Apostle Peter even went further, and he said, husbands are to dwell with their wives with understanding and honor them. She's not referred to as the old ball and chain. She isn't the old lady. She's your wife, and she needs to be honored. God tells us she needs to be honored. In 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, and in verse 7, husbands, likewise, dwell with them, with your wives, with understanding, give an honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. When I was a young man, even a boy, I heard lessons about this, you know, the woman's the weaker vessel. Well, she's weaker physically, and the man needs it. No, that's not what Peter is talking about, not at all. The weaker vessel is like fine everyday china. You know, if you have just the normal everyday dishes, they're pretty sturdy, and you can flop them around, and they're not going to break. But you take a piece of fine china, especially one that you can kind of look through, and you drop it, it's going to be shattered. And that's the thing. The way that you treat that fine piece of china is the way that the wife is to be treated. You have that china, many times, especially in the older generations, they're proud of it. And they'll put it on display, maybe in the dining room. They'll have a hutch there with the windows in it. We need to cherish our wives in the same manner. Someone has said, and you've probably heard it many times, wives ought to be cherished because out of all the men in the world that she could have chosen, she chose you. And therefore, you need to respect her. Marriage is sacred. Job knew that. Also, the New Testament tells us that the husband is to submit to his wife and always consider her needs. Have you come across those individuals? I'm the head of this house and you'll do as I say. And they'll think that they've become this dictator in the family. Well, husbands are to be the head of the family. And they are to be the ones who are the spiritual guides of the family, to see that the family is properly educated in the ways of the Lord, taught the things that God would have them to know. But I want you to look at 1 Corinthians 7 with me. In 1 Corinthians 7, verses 3 and 4, let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. Now listen to this. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. God in the very beginning said, the two shall become one flesh. And being one flesh, they are to live for one another. Whether it's the physical aspects of the relationship, or we might even look to the spiritual aspects of the relationship, even though that's not exactly what's under consideration here. But they are to be considerate of one another. And in many cases, the husband needs to submit to his wife. Especially looking, as we look here, to this physical relationship. Job considered marriage sacred. As a worthy man, he is kind. I can remember years ago, if preachers preached on love, especially, they were considered soft. Why? That's not really doctrine. My friends, 1 John 4 and verse 8 says, God is love. And you and I are more like God when we love as God loves. And God loves us with kindness. Ephesians 2 and verse 8 says, by grace you have been saved through faith. Grace, what is that? Favor, kindness, compassion, love. God was kind toward mankind, even though man had rebelled against him, and gave him the opportunity to be saved and to turn back to him. Job understood this concept of being kind. In verse 13 of our text, he says, if I have despised the cause of my male or female servant when they complained against me, what then shall I do when God rises up, when he punishes? How shall I answer him? Did not he who made me in the womb make them? Did not the same one fashion us in the womb? He says, if I have kept the poor from their desire, or caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or eaten my morsel by myself so that the fatherless could not eat of it, but from my youth I reared him as a father, and from my mother's womb I guided the widow. If I have seen anyone perish for lack of clothing, or any poor man without covering, if I have kept the poor from their desire, or let me go on. I can't walk and chew gum at the same time, so be patient with me here. If his heart has not blessed me, if he was not warm with the fleece of my sheep, if I have raised my hand against the fatherless when I saw I had help in the gate, then let my arm fall from my shoulder. Let my arm be torn from my socket. For destruction from God is a terror to me because of his magnificence. I cannot endure. He said, if I am not fair with others, if I am not kind with others, if I mistreat others, or I neglect to meet the needs of those who are less fortunate than me, let God tear out my arm because I'm not using it to help people as I should. He is a kind individual. He is characterized by love because one of the things we learn about love when we go to the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, love suffers long and is kind. Now, we're going to look at the rest of this passage a little later on in the lesson, so we're not going to consider it all now, but look at what it says. Love suffers long and is kind. Sometimes we can be kind to people initially, but when they might do something that we don't really care about, it's kind of hard to be kind to them. But God was kind to us even when we rebelled against him. Matter of fact, the godly man today heeds the command to be kind to all. In Ephesians chapter 4 and in verse 32, it says, be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you. Kind to one another, tenderhearted. That doesn't make you a weakling. It makes you a real man because you are like God. You are like the Son of God. And therefore, you're what God would have you to be. And that's what Job was. He was kind to even his servants and those who were in need. And notice, he mentions the fatherless and widows. And James mentioned them also, that we are not to neglect them, that pure and undefiled religion is to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. We are to be aware of those who are less fortunate than us and to be kind to them and assist them. One of the other things we note about Job that makes him a worthy man is that he is not a false worshiper. As we go back to our text and we look to verse 24 beginning, and I just put myself out of the thing here. All right, let's come back. There we go. Job 31 and verse 24. If I have made gold my hope, or said to fine gold, you are my confidence. If I have rejoiced because my wealth was great, because my hand had gained much, if I had observed the sun when it shines, the moon moving in brightness, so that my heart has been secretly enticed, my mouth has kissed my hand, this also would be iniquity, deserving of judgment, for I would have denied God who is above. Do you know how many people make gold or money their hope? That it is their security. It is their confidence. This afternoon, as I was resting up a little bit from this morning, I was watching the golf tournament. There's some major tournament going on. And I just watched a little bit of it. But during the period of time that I was watching it, there had to be at least 5 or 6 commercials about preparing for retirement. Well, we ought to be individuals who prepare for the future. But we should not be so focused on it that we eliminate everything else, that we're not kind to others, that we don't help others, that we're focused on the here and now and living for ourselves. Job was not that way, and we are not to be that way. Job doesn't worship money. If we look to the passages that Paul wrote in 1 Timothy 3:1-3, this is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop must be blameless. The husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, not greedy for money. This is what God expects of one who would be a leader among his people, one who would be an overseer among his people. And therefore, it ought to be a quality that each one of us seeks to possess also. If we look to 1 Timothy 6 and verse 10, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness, pierced themselves through with many sorrows. I have known people, and you probably have too, who were good Christians at one time, but they became consumed with the things of the here and now. They became consumed with money and gaining more. And it costs them their faith. We also look to Hebrews 13, verse 5, where we are warned, let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Don't worship money. Don't love money to the point that it causes you to lose your faith. Also, Job does not fall prey to the false idols of the sun, the moon, the stars, nature, and astrology that people do today. And as we look to these things, we understand covetousness is idolatry. So anything that draws us away from God, anything that we put our confidence in other than God and the will of God, is not good for us. We talked about Job being kind, but we also see that he is loving. Verses 29 and 30. If I have rejoiced at the destruction of him who hated me, or lifted myself up when evil found him, indeed, I have not allowed my mouth to sin by asking for a curse on his soul. This speaks volumes of the kind of man that Job was. It also tells us what kind of men we need to be. Not to rejoice over someone that we don't like very well is suffering, or something evil is happening to them, and not cursing them. If you look to Job, Job embodied the principles of love that we saw earlier in 1 Corinthians 13, but we're going to look at them now. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy, does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. These are the qualities that the Apostle Paul, by inspiration, said ought to characterize the love that we have. And notice, as we look to these things, these are qualities that each one of us, whether male or female, ought to have. And if we are truly loving individuals, we will possess these qualities and we will manifest them to others, because we are to even love our enemies. You're familiar with the passage in Matthew chapter 5 in the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus said, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. Consider this before we go on to the rest of this passage. Notice he said that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. Most of the time when we think of sons, we think of descendants. Sons of. I have two sons. But the word son also in Scripture can mean one like unto. Okay? This, I believe, is the meaning here. That you may be those like unto your Father in heaven. Why? Because God loved us when we didn't deserve it. God loved us when we were sinning against him. God loved us when we rebelled against him. And therefore, we need to love our enemies even as God loved us. And as we look to this and continue on, notice, for if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore, you shall be perfect just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Perfect in love, complete love. That you don't just love those who love you, but you love all mankind. And you try to do that which is good toward all mankind, just as God did in the sending of his Son. You're familiar with John 3:16. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. There's a lot more that we could say about loving, but we need to move on. Job, I believe, is a worthy example to us because he is hospitable. The truly hospitable person has to possess the characteristic of being generous and willing to share. Job was that way. Look at verse 31 of our text. If the men of my tent have not said, who is there that has not been satisfied with his meat? But no sojourner had to lodge in the street, for I have opened my doors to the traveler. Hospitality is literally means showing love to strangers. And we need to be hospitable individuals. The godly man practices the hospitality that is enjoined by the Apostle Peter in 1 Peter 4 and verse 9 when it says, be hospitable to one another without grumbling. Now, most of the time, sadly, when many who claim to be Christians think of hospitality, they just think, well, we'll invite so-and-so over for a meal, you know? And they have them over for a meal. Or they've been invited to someone's place for a meal, and they think, well, they're showing hospitality. Well, in a sense, maybe they are, especially by our modern definition. But so many times what happens is, well, you know, we need to have the so-and-so family over because they had us over, and if we don't have them over, they're going to think, you know, bad things about us. So does that sound like doing it without grumbling? You know, even that. We are to share with one another. We are to look out for one another. And hospitality is a characteristic of all godly men, such as Abraham. The Hebrew writer refers to him in Hebrews, the 13th chapter, and verse 2. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing you have unwittingly entertained angels, just as Abraham did. And Abraham opened his home and his heart to those angels when they visited. We look to Job as the worthy man, and he is sincere in all his ways. As we go back to our text, verse 33, if I have covered my transgressions as Adam by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, because I feared the great multitude and dreaded the contempt of families, so that I kept silence and did not go out of the door, oh, that I had one to hear me. Here is my mark. Oh, that the Almighty would answer me, that my prosecutor had written a book. Surely I would carry it on my shoulder and bind it on me like a crown. I would declare to him the number of my steps. Like a prince, I would approach him. He said, if I have done wrong, I'm not going to hide it. I'm going to acknowledge what I have done. I'm going to be sincere. Being sincere is realistically facing life. Sincere in obedience to God, sincere in living up to the standards that God has given. Job is not a double-minded man, and we're not to be double-minded, thus unstable. James tells us in James chapter 1, if we lack wisdom, let us ask God, but don't ask with doubt, because if you're asking in doubt, you're a double-minded man, you're unstable in all your ways. We need to be sincere. Our faith in God, we must believe that he is and that he rewards those who diligently seek him. And we need to seek him because the pure in heart will see God. And that's what we need to do. And the godly man realizes that the heart demonstrates what one really is. In Proverbs 23 and verse 7, for as he thinks in his heart, so is he. We look to another proverb, the 27th proverb in verse 19. As in water, face reflects face, so a man's heart reveals the man. We are what we think about. We are what's on our mind, in our heart. Finally, we see that Job, being a worthy man, is respectful of his blessings. And we need to respect our blessings too. In verse 38 of our text, if my land cries out against me and its furrows weep together, if I have eaten its fruit without money or caused its owners to lose their lives, then let thistles grow instead of wheat, weeds instead of barley. He is thankful for his blessings. He is thankful that God has blessed him. He is a good steward of the things with which God had blessed him. He is unlike the Gentiles. He does not fail to thank God for his blessings. But he acknowledges that all he has that is good comes from God. We're told by James in James chapter 1 and verse 17 that every good and perfect gift is from above, comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation nor shadow of turning. We need to be grateful for the blessings that we have and acknowledge God as the one who has given us all those blessings. As we bring our lesson to a close, we look to the concept that Job was recognized, he was praised. Wait a minute, I think I went too far. There we go. Yep. Job was recognized, praised, and blessed by God because of the kind of man that he was. Will God recognize me as his own? Will I be praised by God? Well done, good and faithful servant. Will God continue to bless me as he has blessed me so far? I need to be the kind of man that God will bless. And all of us can learn from him. All of us can learn from God and the things of God in that regard. As we look to closing out our lesson, I want us to think about Job and think about how God blessed him and how we need to be the ones who are worthy of such blessings also, worthy of a good mate, worthy of God's consideration of us. In just a moment, our brother is going to lead us in a song. We encourage you during that period of time, if you have a need to come to the Lord and to respond to his invitation, that we can help you. We can do those things that the Lord would have us to do, nothing more, nothing less. If you've never been baptized, if you've never given an initial obedience to the gospel of Christ, now is the opportunity. Now is the proper time. You can come at this time, make your confession of belief in Jesus Christ as the Son of God, be buried in the likeness of his death in the watery grave of baptism. You'll be raised free of sin, a new creation, a child of God, with all the blessings that God's children have resting upon you, including the blessing of the hope of life eternal. Or if you're one who's claimed to be a child of God, but you haven't been living as you should, or you haven't been that worthy man or worthy woman that God would have you to be, that you've not manifested the qualities and characteristics that a good child of God should. Maybe you need to acknowledge a sin that you've committed and turn from it with a penitent heart. Or maybe you just need the prayers of the saints here to help you grow stronger, to overcome any weakness you might have. Whatever your need may be, let us all consider our standing before God. And if you need help to do what God would have you to do and be what God would have you to be, we encourage you to come forward while our brother leads us. Let's stand and sing this song.